Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Michael Janz, co-founder of Agency Revolution, where we automate your systems, engage your customers, and help you grow your agency faster. And I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast, where it's our job to find the geniuses, innovators, movers, and shakers in the insurance industry, and to discern and deconstruct what they do and share those stories with you to help you grow your agency faster. This is a super fun and interesting conversation, in part because I think our guest is fun and interesting. He's the CEO of a family-owned agency. He took this agency over, purchased it from his father, and has grown it steadily year after year for 20 years. And so it's considerably bigger, I think 10x the size it was when he took over. You may recognize Anson Ross Thompson and the Thompson Group from being on the front cover of Rough Notes not too long ago. And you may find his story extremely interesting. I did. He has built an agency where he hasn't sacrificed his life for the agency. He's built an agency that supports the life that he wants. And part of the interesting story is that when time came for him to add a branch to the agency, naturally he did it down the street. The street being probably Highway 80, I'm guessing, because he didn't put it in Indiana where his primary agency is. He put the branch in Colorado, and the reason he did that is because he wanted to. And I just think he likes Colorado. And so it's just a really interesting story, and he shares very openly some of the fun and interesting things that he does to make the agency a little bit different. And he describes his agency as being different, as being unique. And perhaps you'll get a little bit of taste of that from this conversation. He's also an author. I think 8 books available on Amazon right now. Very prolific. Sometimes known as the insurance ninja. So I think you're going to enjoy this conversation. A couple things I'm going to pass on really quickly. Number one, in case you had missed this previously, I am the co-author of a book published by the international publisher Wiley. And full disclosure, I don't make any money off of that, neither do any of the co-authors. It's an agreement that we all entered into so that all the resources really could produce an excellent guide and overview on the topic. Name of the book is The InsurTech Book. It was came out publicly a little over a month ago. For those of us who are serious students of the industry, I will recommend that you get a copy of the book because InsurTech is such an important trend or such an important force that it's changing the industry that we work in. A lot of InsurTech is unfriendly and some InsurTech is friendly. And I think you'll appreciate the chapter, which was my contribution to the book and to some extent my contribution to the thinking and philosophy of what InsurTech is and what it can be. You can look that chapter up. It's very early on in the book. So number one, Google or go to Amazon and search for the InsurTech book, get a copy of it. And number two, I'm always looking for what you want. Basically, this isn't my podcast. This is your podcast. I'm just kind of the guy in the middle who facilitates, hopefully, interesting conversations. So what I want to ask you is what conversation do you want to listen to and who do you want me to have that conversation with? I can't read your mind. And so what I'm going to ask you is think now. If Michael could interview anybody in the insurance industry or maybe even outside of the insurance industry, who would that be? If you pass that name on to me, it makes it easier for me to go to my prospect and say, hey, my listeners want you. And so it's very helpful for me. So you can post on the podcast page on the Agency Revolution website, or you can just email me and tell me what you want, michael@agencyrevolution.com. So now, without further ado, it is a privilege to pass on my conversation with Anson Ross Thompson, the CEO of the Thompson Group. Anson Ross Thompson, thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
I am fantastic, Michael. How are you?
Well, I'm doing very good. Thank you. So having survived our first monsoon of the season, doing quite well here in Cave Creek. So you are in Indiana today, and I wouldn't necessarily know that because you also have a branch, so to speak, in Colorado, and that's part of the story that we're going to be getting to. But let's start at the very beginning. Can you introduce yourself and give us a little thumbnail on who Anson Ross Thompson is?
Sure. I hail from beautiful Parker City, Indiana, a town of 1,300 people. My father was an independent insurance agency owner there in our small town. I graduated Ball State University, the Harvard of Muncie, back in 91 with an undergraduate degree in insurance. I went back and got a graduate degree in information and communication sciences. At that time, I was contemplating going in to work for consulting companies, but with the insurance degree and looking at my father's agency as a foundation, I decided I would go work with him. And so went in. I think first year I made $15,000 with a master's degree in beautiful Parker City, Indiana. But the cost of living was such that that was okay for my wife and I. I got married about the same time. And for the first couple, 3 years, I muddled through personal insurance, but really found commercial insurance was where I wanted to spend my time. So in 1995, my father came into the agency, and he said, I'm going to retire. I was 25 years old. I had no money. He said, no problem. We'll do a contract. I said, okay. So I started buying the agency January 1st of 1996. About that time, I found a young man that wanted to sell personal insurance from the area. And so Ron Shoemaker, who's still with me today, came into the agency, and we started growing. My first hire was a CFO who's still with me today. So I've got two 20-plus year employees. And over the next 15 years, I grew the agency as a solo owner, really expanding the agency from what was really a small home auto farm insurance agency to really more of a commercial insurance agency. So we were heavy commercial. We did a little bit of benefits. We did a little bit of personal insurance, but where my talents, I found talents really working with commercial business owners. So fast forward to about 7 years ago, and I had went through a divorce a couple years prior to that, and I had met a young lady, Jenny Dilster, and she had an agency similar size to mine, and we decided to put our agencies together. We did that. They were basically mirrors of each other. It was kind of weird. By that time, Jenny had second generation as well. Her father, Jerry Dills, had started R&B Patty in Richmond, Indiana, and she had kind of done what I did. She had started from scratch in Indianapolis office. And so after a few years, she and I put our agencies together. When Jenny and I connected, we were tired of people always saying, someday I'm going to do this, someday I'm going to do that. And so we named our company Someday Is Today, doing business as the Thompson Group.
Okay.
So that's our LLC. And, you know, over the past few years, we have continued to grow. We have offices in Indiana, in still beautiful Parker City, Indiana, and then also Indianapolis, Indiana. We have two locations here. And that's really where the bricks and mortar are for our company.
Right.
Why was Indiana successful? I would say that the team that we put together, I am not the sharpest tool in the shed, but I know how to find good people that do things a lot better than I. I early on in my career knew that I could sell, I could write, I'm a writer, and I could speak occasionally. And those were my only skill sets. If I had to do applications, it was not going to be good. If I had to do a lot of customer service, it was not good. So I, along with Jenny, built out this great customer service team. And so backing up about 12 years ago, I had a young man join my company when he was 15 years old. That young man today is 27. He is the manager of my company.
Right.
He graduated from Ball State University with an elementary education degree, and he has been the one that has allowed Jimmy and I to really spread our wings. As the operations manager, he does all the contract review for the carriers, and so that was how we got Indiana successful. And so that takes us up to about, I'm going to say, January of 2016.
Okay, so you're about to jump into Colorado, am I right? But I'm going to pause you if you are.
Is it, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah,
So at this point, now let's say we've gone to 2016, and you got involved then 20 years prior to that, right? And so at that point, the agency really had transformed, because as I recall, it was a small, mostly personal lines agency when you took it over.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, right. It was probably 80% personal, 10% commercial, and maybe 10% benefit. So
okay.
We were a pretty small shop.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. And so now, fairly significant transformation. My notes say, correct me if I'm wrong, 70% commercial. Is that right?
Correct.
And then what, it's 15 personal and 15, what, benefits?
Benefits, correct.
Yeah, yep. Okay. So in terms of how you got from A to B, where, mm-hmm. you know, what used to be 80% personal is now shrunk down into, you know, the pie's a lot bigger, but the personal lines is now only 15%. What I'm curious about is how did you do that you think is different than what other people do, or maybe just better than what other people do?
Yeah, great question. So after I was in the agency for just a short time, Westfield Insurance had a young agents, perpetuation program. It was
right.
an 8-week program. And up to that point, I'd been really just playing in personal lines. And it was there I learned commercial insurance at Westfield. So I came back from Westfield, and this would have been, again, before I started buying the company. But I just started calling on business owners. And one of the things I don't have is call reluctance. I don't mind prospecting. As of to this day, I still make prospecting calls. I think it's part of what separates our agency from most others. I think most agency owners kind of wait for the phone to ring. We're very aggressive. We go out after, you know, accounts. We're not sitting on our hands. We're actually making those dials.
And how do you choose, Anson, how do you choose who to dial?
Well, great question. I think it comes down to, you know, who's our best target verticals. Right now, we know that we've got a pretty hot product for technology. So it really comes. I think it starts with the carriers. We kind of look at the carriers and what their appetite is. Also, if we've written, let's say, an excavation contractor, I might, you know, go after. So it's really, kind of an organic thing, if you will. Mm-hmm. First, we look at the carriers, what can they do? And then, let's say I get referred to, a restaurant. Well, a restaurant owner is going to know other restaurant owners. And so, really, it was just really picking up that phone and then referral base. We've since expanded that model, which I'll talk about that
okay.
in a later. But,
all right.
But a lot of it is just picking up the phone. And I let the personal lines just continue to grow. Today, we don't really market personal insurance. We grow mm-hmm. personal insurance through our commercial clients by doing the business owners and obviously the referrals.
Okay. So. And when you, I'm sorry, what year did you take over?
1996.
96, when you started to purchase it from your dad. How big was the team when you took over?
How big was the revenue at the time?
No, your team.
The team? Yeah, there was about... four of us at the time. Okay. It was myself, CFO, so and a couple customer service agents. So,
and the team now is?
20, I think we're right at 20 people right now.
Okay. And are they, so at least in terms of personnel, it's 500% growth. And so are they fundamentally, like, is a lot of that growth, are they producers with CSR supporting them?
Yeah, we have, I believe, as of today, we have 7 producers and then 13 support staff. And our support staff could be anywhere from operations, financial, claims, customer service, quality control, marketing, and processing. So we really try to find the best people in the country. One of the unique things about our agency is a lot of our staff work from home from various places. We've got employees in Louisville, Kentucky, Lafayette, Indiana, Bloomington, Indiana, Indianapolis. We have found that by using technology and letting people work from home, they're a lot more effective. It is not for everybody, but yeah, we're one of those unique businesses that have people populated. And we put the people based upon their skill set and then carve out a very specific thing for them to do within the agency.
All right, let's pause on that and let's talk about that for a moment. Clearly, there is a trend in the workforce in general for remote workers. I had a lot of experience with it myself when I was the CEO of Agency Revolution. We had people from Maine to Vietnam, but it wasn't always like that. And I do recall, it was a good 5-6 years ago when a very young, talented guy that was working for me that I had invested a year of training and development and coaching approached me and he said, "Hey, my wife's pregnant and she really wants to move back to Washington State." And I was like, "Oh, no, how can that happen?" And it was after some discussions with Maggie and with the management team, we said, "Well, let's see how remote works." And boom, that was the beginning of a total transformation of the company, such that as people left Bend, Oregon, which is a small town, they stayed with the company. So we ended up with people literally all over the United States and, of course, Vietnam. So what I'm curious about for you is, first of all, was there a little weeping and gnashing of teeth about whether or not to do it? And how did you decide that it was a risk worth taking? And then my third part of it is going to be, how do you manage it so it works well?
Okay, I'll start with how did we get into it? About 10 years ago, I'm just, you know, time flies when you're having fun. So I'm gonna say 10 years ago, I had a CSA, customer service agent, that was leaving. And at the same time, my underwriter from Monroe Guarantee, who lived about 2 hours away, they had done a reduction in force, and I had loved working with her. And I didn't really think it was going to be possible to drive 2 hours a day. So our first stab was probably 10 or plus years ago. And I saw the foundation of how it could work. If you think back, the internet speeds back then compared to today, there's no comparison. So
yeah.
we put on the training wheels about 10 years ago.
Okay.
But as time evolved and we began hiring different people with these different skill sets, we might hire somebody that lived in Bloomington, Indiana. Well, that's about an hour and a half to our Indianapolis office. And by that time, knowing our system and the capabilities, we had graduated to Applied Systems Epic. We were using terminal service. I haven't had an office myself for a number of years, so I only work remotely. So I knew it was possible to get our people working remotely. And so the Bloomington, I would say, is the newest one, or is the latest iteration. That was the one that kind of got us back into doing the work from home. But our newest employee, we had 3 candidates, 2 from our small town and 1 from Lafayette, Indiana. Well, Lafayette, Indiana is an hour and a half from Indianapolis, from our Indianapolis office.
Right.
And we actually interviewed her via Zoom. We did not do an in-person interview. And her skill set was so outstanding that we hired her, and now she is driving for a limited time to do training down at Indy, but ultimately she will be working from home full-time. And so that was the first question. The second question you asked was?
Oh, yeah, I was just spitballing questions out there, and I no doubt lost track of them. But my first question is, how did you get into it? What was it, kind of an emotional or psychological challenge that you had to overcome? And so now it's like I'm curious about the ongoing management of it. How do you set it up so that it works well? I know that one of my anxieties was that, you know, it was initial and it was not overly intelligent, which was, how do I know that, you know, so-and-so is going to really be getting their work done? Because now when I walk through the office, and I was fundamentally remote myself, I've been pretty remote for a good 20 years. You know, it's like, okay, I can see Josh has his head down, right? What does that mean? You know, he's got his head down in the cubicle, so he must be working. So for us and for me, the real breakthrough was realizing that having remote workers will require me to be a better manager. So in other words, I need to communicate clearly what the expectations are and then set up some system of accountability and cadence of communication so that I can monitor their progress. And I've got metrics that make it a lot easier. How do you manage the sort of ongoing day-to-day operations of somebody that's 2 hours or more away?
Well, I look at Dakota, my operations manager, and first and foremost, it's his responsibility to make sure that the work is getting done. But going back to the Bloomington, Indiana employee, a friend of mine, insurance agency owner, said, how do you know if she's doing the work? And I said, because she's doing marketing, and if the marketing's not getting done, I'll know it. And so, I think that if you utilize applied systems reports and know what client counts are, we compare ourselves to the, you know, top 25% of all agencies. And so as we continue to grow, we're constantly making sure that the number of clients and the books of business are able to be serviced by the staff. And that's why we hired the most recent employee, was we noticed we were getting on the cusp of that. But how do we manage it? I think you asked, was I concerned about it? No, I was never concerned about it, because I, like you, had been working remotely forever. And I think if you hire people with work ethic, which is basically what we find in the Midwest, they're going to do the job. And if they don't do the job, I don't mind firing them. You know, it's a disservice to keep somebody on your company that's not... So, but we have not had to do that yet. We have not had to fire an employee working from home at this point.
So when you say top 25%, are you using like Reagan best practices as your benchmark?
Yeah, Dakota's got, we ordered something online. I think it's an independent insurance agency offering that you know, rates the top. And then so we have the spreadsheet, and we constantly are looking at that as kind of a dashboard.
Got it. Okay. And I'll encourage our listeners to listen to the podcast that I had with Reagan, with Tom at Reagan. And I think he did an outstanding job. So congratulations on that. So with the remote, so I have another question about remote. So you have how many physical offices now?
Well, we have two in Indiana and two in Denver, Colorado.
Okay, so real physical offices, bricks and mortar, where clients can come and employees work. Is that right?
That is correct. Most of the labor is in Indiana, in the Midwest, and there's a couple reasons we did that. First of all, that's where we started. The cost of labor in Indiana versus Colorado is a little bit different. And we knew it would be a competitive advantage if we could continue to build out the service team in Indiana, almost like a service center, and then grow through sales in Denver. So we have four employees in Denver, and it's all sales. So there's no service that really occurs in Denver. All the service goes back to the Indianapolis location.
But they have a physical office, those four, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We have one in Stapleton and one down.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you a question for which there's, you know, the answer might be more opinion or insight than, you know, sort of a digital yes or no. But what I'm curious about is, how important do you think physical offices are for the independent insurance agency of today? Because you've got a lot of remotes. So to some extent, you know, do you think we need physical offices sometimes for employees, for some employees, or every now and then for the entire team together to get together? Or do you think it's important for customers, or people should go back and listen to the interview that I did with the CEO and founder of the Insurance Lounge? In that case, the physical office is so transformative that it's a fundamental part of the advertising and marketing strategy. Where do you come down on that?
I don't think in the future that we are going to need bricks and mortar offices. Knowing how we're growing and how the industry's changing, I can see the day where we flat would not need physical offices.
Got it. Okay.
That's I'm going to say at a minimum 10 years out, but I could see the day where they're just not as important. You know, when my father had the agency, people would stop by and he had sale. And now everything's electronic.
Yeah.
And so I've said to our operations manager, it won't be too long before, you know, these offices kind of will just lose the need for those, I think, over time.
Okay. All right. So now, I'm going to put the earlier part of our conversation, I'm going to take it off pause. All right. So we've got this guy, Anson Ross Thomas in Indiana, and maybe he, you know, things are going really well, 500% growth. And, you know, maybe, and you've opened up another branch and you're thinking, hey, maybe, you know, we should find another branch, another physical location. Why don't we go to Colorado? Now, from Indiana to Colorado, I suppose somebody might ask, where's the strategic underpinning on that decision? So tell us what your thinking was when you made that decision.
Well, I had went out to Denver with my kids on vacation and had really never been out and spent any time in the mountains. And so after a week with my kids, I came back and told my partner, let's go out and do a CRM update. Both Jenny and I are both certified risk managers. We have that, you know, wonderful update every year.
Right.
Thanks to Bill Holm.
Indeed.
And, And so, I took her out there and, we did 3 days in Denver and I took her to Boulder, Colorado, which is one of my favorite places in the world.
Right.
And I rented a carriage house and let her drink the Kool-Aid. And so after that, I was trying to figure out a way to get back to Denver because I loved it. Had no idea I was going to open, you know, we were going to open an agency there. And I contracted with basically the Big Eye of Colorado. And I did a 5-hour sales program for them. They hired me to come out because I'm from Indiana, I've now become an expert in Colorado. So I figured out. And so I had some success with the Big Eye out there. Worked on a couple other opportunities that quite frankly, I was working with some educational colleges about doing some sales work with them, and I couldn't come to terms. And so I went to Jenny, my partner, and I said, let me go out 1 week a month and see what I could find out there. And her response was, okay, you have 1 year. You have to find an agency to buy. And the reason we made that decision was basically the growth that we saw in the Denver market, it's unlike anything we'd ever seen before. Indianapolis is a very, very good, solid market. You know, Muncie, Indiana, Parker City, all these areas where we do business. But once we got to Denver, something was going on. And so I went out there in January of 16, and I knew basically two people. One of them was the person that hired me to do the sales training, and the other one was a referral from her, an accountant that I had basically leased office space from for a year. And so I got the office, and I called Bob, my new friend, and I said, okay, I'm in town. What do you recommend? And he said, well, there's going to be a meeting tomorrow. I want you to, you know, show up. And so I go to this meeting, 7 o'clock in the morning, and there's about 25 people there, and at that day, I got 5 business cards. And from those 5 business cards, within 4 months, I found the agency to buy. We closed on the agency March of 17, and now have a pretty good operation going out in Colorado, to the point where Jimmy and I get on a plane every week. We have a downtown condo in downtown Denver. We have a home in downtown Indianapolis. And we spend our time going back and forth every week. Our clients really don't mind because when they call us, we answer the phone. You know, and they never know really where we are. But and then we have this amazing staff behind us. So, that's why we did Denver. And if you've not been to Denver, ladies and gentlemen, I highly recommend you make a trip because it is like living in the future out there.
Let me see if I'm hearing you right. You went to Denver at least ostensibly because you saw that it might be a growth market. But there might have been a really strong personal motivation is that you dug the mountains.
It was the mountains.
Okay. Come on, Anson. Let's tell the truth to each other. All right.
Let me say this, Michael. What happened was I watched my father retire in Florida, and my mom and he retired when at 55, and they went down. And they spent half time down there.
Right.
And so when the opportunity of Denver came up, I thought, that's where I want to spend the rest of my life, but mm-hmm. I don't want to wait till I'm 50 or 60 or 70. So at 45, 46 years old, pulled the trigger to go out there and really start my, I don't want to say retirement because I never have plans on retiring, but I knew that's where I wanted to spend a lot of time.
Your life.
Not
okay.
Walking away from Medina. Right. So it was a life, I hate to say lifestyle decision because I'm living in both cities, but that's what was the driver.
Okay. So the Colorado office is doing well.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And
yes,
so I suppose you might give me the same answer. Why do you think Colorado is doing so well, especially with you having so little experience there? It's, you had zero network. You knew two people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, I would say there's a couple things that happened. First of all, I am equally as networked in Denver, Colorado, if not more so than back in the Indianapolis, Muncie area, as of today. Just because of how did I do it?
Yeah, how did that happen?
I began going to very specific organizations. One's called Colorado Trusted Advisors. That's a group of about now 75 to 100 people between New Mexico and Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
I actually run one of the groups now.
What is that?
Colorado Trusted Advisors is a group of trusted advisors that really band together once a month and get really deep with each other. You know, I've got an employee benefits guy in there. I've got a financial advisor in there. People would hear that and say, well, it sounds kind of like B&I. It's B&I, but it's B&I on steroids.
Okay.
With some very high-end, professionals that I've partnered with.
Okay.
After that, I was invited to another group, kind of similar but different, bankers, attorneys, and I had to find meetings that occurred the third week of the month because that was the only week I was going to be in town. And so all of my networking was occurring the third Tuesday of every month, I am a part of a peer group, okay? So that was another step that I took. But as soon as I got out there, I found I had done some peer group work in Indiana. Mastermind is what you might call it, Vistage-type work.
Okay.
And when I went out there, I knew that was the first thing I needed to do was to find a group like that, because if people could see our company and how we worked, eventually it would be an amazing referral source and I need to figure out this market. And so I got involved with a group called the Alternative Board, or TAB, and that meets 4 hours the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 11. And I have a coach that I got with that was very instrumental in connecting me throughout the city of Denver. Without Bob Dodge, I would not be where I am. He's my coach. He's my mentor. He's my friend. He has done so much for our company. He is one of the reasons we found the agency to buy.
And he's a business coach, an executive coach?
He is an executive coach. He owns a franchise out in Denver. And so that was, so I had CTA, TAP board, and then the third one was STAR. STAR is the third Friday of every month. And In both CTA and STAR, the leadership groups came to me after about a year and asked me to lead both of those groups. Not because I'm good at that, but I think they wanted some humor, they wanted some energy, and they kind of plucked me out. So here I am in year two, leading two of the networking groups that I'm a part of and having the time of my life. And I think that by getting into a leadership position so quickly, it did kind of show our firm a little bit different. It opened some opportunities.
Yeah.
Since that time, I've gotten a Rotary. I really am an advocate for Rotary. I think Rotarians are a special group of people, and that's been key as well. And then since we've started going back and forth every week, now I've got some standing meetings the first week of the month as well. But from a networking standpoint, it's one of the things I teach. How do you travel 1,187 miles and quickly get into a community? And it is one of my teachings. I have a pretty good plan for that.
All right. So I'm going to ask you to describe how you perceive your job. So you're the agency principal, but that's not a job. Are you a producer?
I am a producer, and on purpose, I am contracting my book.
Uh-huh.
I am my main role in the agency today is sales management.
Okay.
But I still have a book of business. But as I said, I'm trying to contract that a little bit because I really want to really focus on the sales management aspect of the agency. Any new business that I bring in, I code to another producer, trying to get them self-sustaining. I've got one producer yet to go, and I think I can get him this year self-sustaining. But all new business that comes in the agency, although I might find it, I do bring in a junior associate, if you will, and they work with the account with me. So, you know, they're really the lead agent on that, but I'm just helping them. My role today is to help our young professionals grow personally and professionally. That is my main job today.
Okay. So in the early years of your success, is it a safe assumption that your success was because of your production capability, your personal production capability?
Yes. Many years, I was the number one producer in the company and had a very, very good. And then realized that I could do so much, but if I trained other people how to do what I did, it might be a little bit better gig, and that's what's happened.
And so when did you begin to make that transition?
I'm going to say about 3 years ago, I started that movement.
All
right. And so just so you know, we have monthly sales meetings. No longer do I even include myself in the production report. We have a set number we go after every month, and we are, as of right now through May, we were 93% the goal, and I juiced the goal this year pretty strong. So I'm pretty happy with the results, and that's not, again, not including any of my production. That's the team's production.
Got it. All right. Okay. I know that you've done some fun things with marketing over the years, right? Share with us like some of the things that you think you do that help your agency stand out from the crowd.
Well, something we just did last week, and this will probably be shocking to some, but we ordered 1,000 agency condoms. They are the Thompson Group, hashtag Protect. Uh-huh. Those are drop-off pieces. We have guitar picks that on one side have our logo, on the other side says we pick our clients. Probably the most creative thing we've ever done was a few years ago, I had my parents, both in their 70s, pose naked for a marketing campaign called Naked Insurance. I put them on billboards. If you get our website, you still see remnants of my parents naked. They were obviously not naked. They were covered by our logo. And we made a pretty big splash with that back in the day. But I've always been an advocate of having, I think, to walk into a business and drop off a business card is just, I mean, that's what people do to me. And I get business cards, I throw them away.
Right.
I mean, but if you drop off something and say, hey, you know, who's in charge of this? And, well, it's Mark. Can you get Mark this pick? Can you get Mark this, whatever this is?
Bag of rocks. My notes from a previous conversation said you dropped off a bag of rocks. And so there's usually some tagline connection to it, right? So the guitar pick is like, we pick great clients or something like that, or the naked presumably is, you know, are you going naked or something along those lines. The rocks?
Yeah, the rocks. So I buy commercial real estate, and as a young man, I had just bought my first piece of real estate, which was a used storage building. I took an old warehouse and converted it, and at the time I had an extra pile of rocks that they had poured gravel, and I got the wise idea to take little Ziploc baggies, fill them up with rocks, and then I had stickers made that basically said, we rock. And I put as little bit of information about it, about our company, as I can. I want it to be branded, but I don't want them to really know who we are and what we do, because when my producer drops the bag of rocks off and they call and say, Mark, I was the one that dropped off the bag of rocks, they're more than willing to have a conversation.
Right.
Why in the hell do you do? You know what I mean? It's just a point of difference. We give away, you know, I mean, such things as tattoos. We try to be out there a little bit different. Our marketing, okay, so our vehicle, our corporate vehicle is a 1970 VW bus wrapped in tie-dye that's used for corporate events in the community. We do a lot of that type stuff as well.
All right. So it's a good segue to the next part of our conversation. So you've had a couple of successful agencies, Indiana and Colorado, and you've transitioned yourself from being a personal commercial lines producer, and now fundamentally you're a sales trainer for your team. You've got a vision now to share that broader in the industry, right?
Yes, I do.
Got a little feedback. Okay.
A little feedback.
Well, my electronics are getting excited about this one, so let me hear.
Okay. Here we go.
Here we go.
I have a vision that in the insurance industry, although there are great training programs out there and there are people doing some great training, mm-hmm. I don't think as an industry we've done a good job of getting young people excited about the insurance industry. And what I am going to do is I just bought a home in Morrison, Colorado, which is up in the mountains. And I'm going to use that mountain home connected with a B&B to start a training company for young and or tired insurance people. And I'm going to walk them through. I'm not going to teach insurance. I'm going to teach. I was Sandler trained, so I'm going to take a lot of the Sandler basics that I learned in terms of how to make a cold call, how to track your prospecting, how does an effective meeting work. How do you get into a community and start from scratch and build up a network very quickly? I've got a curriculum that I'm working on. It's not complete. I plan on launching in about June of next year. But my initial plan is to do three-day boot camps for young or tired insurance agents, just getting them really excited about the opportunities and thinking and working a little bit different you know, within our industry. I think the way we do it is a good model. I have all the templates. I have, you know, I've created so much content over the years. I've got 9 books on Amazon. So I've got a lot of content out there. It's just now a matter of collecting that and putting it to a form that can be digestible. And agency owners from around the country can send them to me. The question I always get is, why would they do that, knowing you could hire them? Obviously, if an agency owner sent a student or an agent to me, I would not hire them. I would have an agreement that's not my intent. My intent is to train and get really change the industry. I want people to hear the word insurance and go, oh, that's what Tim does, and Tim does really well.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to change that whole perception.
Got it. Okay. You had mentioned, I think, that you have 9 books on Amazon?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are they about insurance or... You had mentioned that to me the last time we talked, but I never pursued what the content was.
Well, the content is basically, it's really big on personal and professional development.
Okay.
Thinking differently.
Uh-huh.
I'm a guy that gets up every morning roughly at 5 o'clock in the morning. I write daily. Mm-hmm. I've got well over 1,000 blogs. You can find my stuff on LinkedIn. And at the end of each year, I take the best 75 to 80 blogs. And they could be on everything from, you know, the importance of being on time to thinking about something a little bit differently, challenging the idea that you have to have an office, challenging the idea that you have to have email come to your phone. I like to challenge the ideas that most people are using in living. I like to always say, I do not work, I live, and I'm trying to help other people stop saying, I go to work, and we just simply live. So that's the focus of my books.
Has your writing, has it been an integral part of business? Has it been beneficial to business? Or is it a more of a personal expression?
It's both. It's therapy for me, but I can't tell you the number of, you know, whether it be agency owners or clients that do read my stuff on a regular basis and continually, you know, share that. And then they also, I know for a fact that as I'm prospecting and I meet new people, I will ask them, hey, I do this daily blog. Do you want me you can be removed at any time. And so I've got quite a few people that daily get my stuff, if nothing more than just a reminder of, oh, that's that crazy insurance,
Indiana or Colorado or wherever he's from. Now, these books, are they Kindle books?
Some of them are on Kindle. I think the last one, I didn't go through that final step. But okay. if you go to Amazon, you can see them all. First one was called Marketing with Naked 70-Year-Olds. That was about the marketing program we did.
Right.
And a lot of other stories. The Lost Art of Talking is one of my books, In Search of Personal Fulfillment. I can't say the last title. It's Enjoy the Effing Journey, but you'll have to check that out.
All right. Well, if somebody jumped on Amazon and looked up Anson Ross Thompson, right, they're going to find your books?
Correct.
Well, Anson, it's been a pleasure and fascinating talking to you about both your success and the way you've approached and created your own adventure and your own journey. If listeners want to find out more about, perhaps if they have any questions, but I suppose also if they want to find out about your sales training, how can people reach you?
Best way I would say right now is the thompsongroup.net, our website. So the thompsongroup.net, I am on social media, Twitter, I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook. So if you search for me, you will find me. But if you want a good overview of what we're doing and how we're doing it, I think a website's a good place to start. And then you can obviously email me from that
Very
side.
Good.
If you have
so is it thethompsongroup.net?
Correct. Thethompsongroup.net.
And is it Thompson with a P or without a P?
With a P.
Okay, very good. Well, Anson, it's been a pleasure sharing some time with you, and I appreciate you sharing your perspective with the industry. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Indeed.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.